Hey, listeners, did you know that Yogi Triathlete offers endurance coaching for body and mind? We offer personalized training plans for endurance sports, wellness and mindset, nutrition and recovery guidance, and race preparation and strategy, all within the supportive community of Team Yogi Triathlete. So if you're ready to conquer your fitness goals and push your limits, our endurance coaches are ready to guide you on the journey to peak performance. Go to yogitriathlete.com today to set up your free 30-minute discovery call and embrace a future of strength, stamina, and achievement. Your goals, our experience, the perfect match for unstoppable success.
I think if you put it in the universe, that's why I talk about Kona, there is a force to that. If you have the courage to speak something out that is so almost ridiculous, delusional. But the thing is, there's nothing irrational about winning a world championship. There's nothing irrational about winning a gold medal. That's why I'm not surprised. For example, unfortunately, the Germans haven't been doing well when it comes to Olympics and all. And I think it has to do partly with the environment, maybe, that it's not a dream or culture. They don't have that. And most of the Germans that adapted that removed themselves a little bit from their culture. Doesn't matter if it's the location, essay, but they evolved, because I know I have the same mindset. It can give you a lot of strength and when you have that background, but you have to know, kind of, you have to learn to dream, let's say.
Welcome to the Yogi Triathlete Podcast. This is episode 408. We are your hosts, Jess and BJ, and we're here today with professional triathlete Maddie Weitz. But more than that, our guest today is a living example of what it looks like to answer a calling. Thriving as an age group triathlete, Maddie was also successful in business as a sports physiotherapist. He was en route to building an empire, and by all means, society would say he should have continued toward the professional and financial success that was inevitable, but that's not what he did. As his passion for triathlon was building, his fulfillment in his profession was falling. And he couldn't help but wonder what life would look like if he put 100% of his focus into his sport. In 2023, Maddie took the leap despite his fears and stepped into a role that he could no longer ignore. He's been documenting his journey on his YouTube channel from mindset to frugality, workout sessions and recovery. Maddie is openly sharing his story. He is embracing patience, facing fears, and putting himself out there for us all to see as he documents his patient pursuit of becoming the very best in the sport of triathlon. We are thrilled to have him with us today. There's so much more I could say about this guy, but instead it's time to hear from the man himself, Maddie Weitz. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jess. Hey, BJ. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. We're just beginning our day and you're wrapping your day up in Finland. So it's amazing that we can connect.
That's it. Yes. Getting dark over here, Finland, wintertime, but Central Europe is the same. But I saw you guys just waking up. So I hope you had your coffee.
We're armed.
We're all coffee. And I know you don't drink coffee after the morning. So sorry.
I should have a coffee before this podcast. I want to be, you know, give energy to the listeners that just taking their time while they're running right now or cycling, whatever they're doing. So I'm going to try my best. I'm awake.
Yeah. It's so good. So good to have you here again. Thank you. Thank you for this time. And, you know, I've been doing a deep dive on your story and who you are. And, I spent a lot of time on the trainer. So I'm binging YouTube a lot. Really immersing myself in how you got to this place, actually how you got right here to our podcast. So, you know, I think that's a good place to start for people that don't know who you are. Like, where did this journey begin? Just sort of alluded to it in the intro, but where did this story begin and how did you get here?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we could start with the story how do you get into sports and this stuff in childhood, but I think I'll bore the audience to death if I just say it's a standard sentence, you know, like I sports when I was growing up and all those things. But I think one thing that's probably worth highlighting is one thing that happened was when I was very young, I was doing judo. It was one of my first passions, so martial arts. And I was, without sounding arrogant, I was pretty good with it. I had a knack for it. And fairly quickly, I was one of the better guys from the young team, let's say, or the young guys. And then I was supposed to go up to the older team, and I did. I went for one or two sessions, and I did judo for years, and then I just quit the sport. I just quit. I had no, let's say, support around. I just, the smallest resistance, and I quit. And that's why it was highlighting, because that stayed to me until this day, because after judo, I did a few things, running and all, but then I did my first triathlon, like so many of the listeners as well, probably, and they feel the fire of these three sports and what it does to you when you cross the finish line. And I had that thing again after judo. And then I felt that, okay, you're not going to quit this no matter what. And that is probably the reason, because the last 6 years, I mean, yes, I was an age grouper wise. I had been a good coach years, and then I qualified for Kona and those things. But then really did the last 5-6 years almost there was not much going on, but I didn't quit. And that is, to be honest, the only reason I didn't quit probably is because of that promise that I made to myself, because I knew I have a burning passion for it. But, you know, I also have a strong ego, so I want to perform. I can control it, but I mean, I have, you know, want to see your numbers improve and all those things. And they didn't happen for many, many years. And yeah, so because of that promise, I didn't quit. And yeah, now it's turning back around. It was a long drought, but now I'm back to what's, I always enjoyed it, but the progress was lacking. Yeah.
Oh, that's such a tough space when you're showing up, nothing's changing. It seems like nothing's changing. You know, it seems like you're stagnant, but what you're building is momentum. And you never know when that momentum is going to hit. What was it about this? Was it regret? Was it a burning desire? Was that this promise was so firm and solid? What was that feeling? Like you're like, I have all these reasons to give up, but I'm not giving up.
I think it was really you can call it, I don't know the right wording for it. I mean, passion is one, but that's probably a too broad a term, but like, it's something like you feel like this is something, not just that you're good at, but you really love this. You probably hear it on my YouTube, or like, I just did a Q&A live session the other day. I wanted to do 15 minutes. I just babbled about triathlon for an hour straight. It's really one of my, I mean, general sports, but everything that comes with it. But it's a real passion of mine. And I think that's one of the reasons why I feel, because a lot of people spend their lives searching for something, you know. And I did get lost in this journey when the sport didn't go. Other things came up in life, and like the work side came up, and suddenly things starting developing there. And I mean, I gave suddenly there more energy there, and then things started happening. But then I just realized that it's not even remotely the same feeling that I get from the sport. Although on paper people say, I mean, there's this one saying that is really funny. I always laugh about it. Everybody knows money doesn't make you happy, but still everybody wants to find out for themselves. And it's so true. It's not like I was rich or anything like that, but I saw the path, and I talked, and I met people in my life then that, for example, one guy, just interesting people through patients as a physio, and he was in a top 10 list of richest in the world. So like billionaire, you couldn't even imagine. So, and I just saw, and then all those other people as well, but like, I just saw them, and yeah, I mean, it's not happiness, right? They're developing their own games in a sense when it comes to money. And it's just, yeah, in the end, you got to find what is your passion. And, that's what I found, and that's why probably the reason why I definitely never quit. Even when I worked the house down at work, let's say, I never sacrificed. I maybe sacrificed sleep. I sacrificed my immune system. Probably was some of the reasons why I didn't improve, for sure, why I overtrained, but I never didn't show up. So I had to control this passion, basically, because it's burning so strong to an extent that if I don't put a lid on it, it's just, you know, it's just going to go. So
What was support like around that desire to follow your passion? Maybe close community, family, friends, like, were they on board and really like, let's go. Yeah, you can do this. Or was it like, it's not the path people should be taking?
Probably the latter. So I mean, growing up in Germany, Central European mentality, and especially Germany is a lot. It's about, you know, first and foremost, job, education, those things. And sport is always considered as a hobby. So it's more like that. And it was like that growing up. So I did the standard path next to it. But yeah, to be honest, over the years, all those things I kind of, because I didn't have like straight up mentors in this area, I kind of built it together through books and podcasts. So even today, it's like people I admire, like from the mental side, let's say the Kobe Bryants out there, or there's so many of those guys who are like so advanced when it comes to the mind, you can just hear it. And you can switch on it, like right now, you can switch on a podcast and you basically imagine, and you're alone in the forest, let's say you switched on a podcast and you're imagining you're just having a conversation with this guy, because it's, so you can really almost download like the blueprint in some areas, because there are patterns with all those people when it comes to mindset. It's not just, you know, the physical abilities, but it's basically there's never quitting, basically always continuing. If it's this your passion, keep going. Eventually it's going to work out, however that looks like. So, yeah.
Can you, I want to dive into mm-hmm. mindset, and this is kind of a mindset piece of it, is you mentioned something, I think it was in one of your blog posts I was reading about, and you learned this from one of my favorite authors, Stephen Pressfield, shadow careers, that most people will stay in a shadow career. And it seems like you are in one. Can you just explain to our viewers what that is and how you were doing it?
Yeah, I literally got the chills right now, because that's really, I read a few books, but from him, I read all the books of the Stephen Pressfield as well. And you saw the shadow career. The definition, like you said, is basically you're having a career that is very close to your passion, but it's not the actual step. For example, he has a couple of examples. It could be all kinds of industries. In my case, it was, for example, I knew from a young age, for example, sport and the body was interesting to me. And even medicine came up, but I didn't back then. I didn't have the grades for it. That I was, you know, at this, Germany has a very specific system. So the next step was then sport physiotherapy. Okay, I started sport physiotherapy, did that. And then after I did that, I treated athletes. I only wanted to treat athletes. And then eventually this business thing came up and we built kind of clinics and only specialized for like athletes again. And then I had professional athletes that I treated. I did literally every single step except doing the step of being that other person on the other side. So it's the shadow career. Yeah, that was definitely me.
Mm. And there's this, I would say it's a false sense of security that when we're in these shadow careers, it's like, well, I'm close enough, right? Like it's good enough. And also it's secure, right? You went from, I think it was like in 2.5 years, you went from 2 employees to 20 employees. And it seemed like you could have kept growing and growing and growing. So if you're measuring decisions on paper, you'd still be there. But you were measuring it on something that really can't be measured. It can only be felt. And it's that calling that you had. And is that something, we'll call it intuition. Has that always been strong with you, or has that been developed over the years?
It developed for sure. But I think that is, to be honest, something that I had, but it came very rare. So most of the times I was floating through life, but when there was this one thing, I just jumped on it. And for no reason, like there wasn't, for example, the first thing was after high school, I mean, there's probably some psychology Freud thing to it, why you're always looking for the more special way and why do you want to be different and those things. I'm sure it's all explainable from childhood. But what the first thing was after school, there was this military unit. It's more or less a special unit, but it wasn't about the military per se. It was more about, it was in the mountains in the south of Germany. They did, you know, climbing, skiing and all those things. And that was the first time ever, because I came from a protective, also you could call it even spoiled surroundings, let's say, when I grew up. And so that was the first time. And I remember I went to the military guy that basically says, where are you going to go? And they said, you can forget that, because it was 700 kilometers south. It's at the other end of Germany. We never sent one guy there. You can forget it. Not ever did we send one to that unit. And for some reason, I really can't explain that I didn't accept this no. So I wrote them letters, I called them, and that worked out. And that was, to be honest, that was more or less learned on my own the hard way, because I really wanted it. And from that, it probably snowballed into, oh, wait, if you keep trying, there's actually always a chance it works out.
Yes.
Yeah, not giving up on that first. And this probably translates into your training as well. You know, any resistance that comes up that says you've got to hit whatever 3 times 10 minutes at 400 watts, you're going to have resistance to it. So being aware of that conversation, I guess, in your head that's saying, nah, maybe not going to happen, but you can be there for that and actually give it a try. So what is your approach on on giving up before you start or seeing things through?
What is my approach? In what sense? Like, how do I deal with it, or how do
Yeah. So how you know, working with that conversation in the mind, because you give yourself your own workouts. I'm right. You're your own coach. So you kind of prescribe this stuff, but you also challenge yourself into what you might be creeping up to that might be just a little bit past the reach. How do you navigate that as you start the session, or even before you get to the session? Do you adjust it? I mean, you're a professional athlete, so you're going to do it. But you got to bump up against some sort of resistance at some point that says stop, just stop, you know, but yet you keep going.
Yeah. So when it comes to that, actually, when we talk about the training aspects, I think they had a long learning curve, because I used to do always what you just said, you always finish it. And that, to be honest, was in many cases my pitfall. So to be honest, the more I read into also or hear or podcasts from the professionals, I mean, I hold a professional is a big word for me at this point. I feel like until I hold a professional license, I'm a rookie pro. My life 24/7 is definitely as professional as I can make it, at least. There's not much room. I live like a monk in a sense. So I feel on that side, I'm professional. But in terms of like, until let's say you can fully pay your bills, let's say, and all those things, I think then you're fully professional. But in terms of training, I mean, I, to be honest, noticed, I mean, I had over 12 years, I had 7 coaches. So in that time, for example, when I did struggle, I did pivot, not right away, but after, if I 1.5 years later, I feel like I'm again stagnating, I changed approaches. So, and sometimes you can blame the training regime, but I like to have more the accountability side of it. So, I mean, I pointed the finger first always at myself. And when it comes to training, I believe even if you have the best coach in the world and you can kind of see it with the best athletes in the world that do the world titles, they make the decisions themselves. They have a coach, but I feel coach is sometimes even the word that could be, some see the coach as a person who guides me through my life. Let's say I take this coach, he's going to be my world champion. Let's say the Dan Lorenz out there, or even the Norwegian coach, everybody would think, if I would just train with this guy, I would be also world champion. It doesn't work that way, because once you start to listen into the athletes that are world champion, you kind of see, okay, they are the one that's steering the ship. They have the vision, and the other ones, they kind of jump on board with that and then tailor each of their, let's say, knowledges or experiences and help that person. So, I do pivot, but I had to learn to build a system. So only in the last, let's say, month and a half, I've had really positive momentum. Before that, was a bit trial and error. So I switched coaches, or went, let's say, self-coached last July. So it's been a minute. And in the beginning, I did some things wrong. Well, you can't say wrong, but let's say I failed, but I adjusted and pivoted. But now I feel like I'm on a very good path that leads to, most importantly, consistency, but also I can train the way I want to. I can train, push to those, not limits, but I can push myself, but I'll have a system in place that, you know, I have 10-day cycles, for example. I went away from 7-day cycles to 10, because the normal triathlon community is often like 3 weeks on, 1 week off. And in a 3-week time, no matter what would be in a program, I would ruin myself. I would tilt it. So I would be, by 3 weeks' time, so tired that 1 week didn't matter, because I probably got sick. So I have a system of 10 days that I know after the 7th day, I put so amazing quality in, and like, I'm so proud of myself. And I didn't used to be proud of myself at all. Same in the business world. Even the partners told me, hey, you know, it is really doing really good what you were doing. They even tried to tell me, look me in the eye as if I wouldn't know. Like you say, I didn't have that feeling. I didn't get a feeling from, this is great. But now in training, even on my own training, more than I have ever had from a coach or anything, alone from that perspective, there's a lot of things moving. And if I'm not moving in swim, bike, run in a strong curve upwards, I'll be the first to take on an advisor to help me look, what is missing. And I have my wife as an objective bounce board. You need something objective, obviously. She's also in the sports medicine world, so she's also a physio. And so she, you know, she can switch that role to someone objective, not just the wife, right? So,
I just wanted to pull upon the monk lifestyle. Like, what is in monk lifestyle to you? What is it? I know what it is because I've been watching your videos, but what are you doing to live this dedicated life to triathlon that you've, what are things that maybe you've cut back on or that you're more focused on?
I think even that I had to control, because when I started out and went full time, because you can also, let's say, burn yourself out mentally with that lifestyle. So you have to find that fine balance to what do you need to stay balanced. And for me, that is much, for example. So my days, I mean, I look more towards, again, role model wise, when I hear people like Kobe Bryant talk or Michael Phelps, and they have amazing stories. And when I hear those talk, I kind of lean on those a bit. Okay, they, I mean, I don't know details, I don't know them in person, but like, they describe a certain lifestyle and pattern and mindset throughout their days. And same as the Kenyan runners, eat, sleep, train, repeat. It's easier said than done, but how can you have a system that you can maintain that for months and not, you know, 2 months and then you're like, oh, I hate the sport. So I found a way now to do that. So it's, but I do need to, for example, on purpose, because my passion is so burning so strong during these, like I said, 10-day rhythms, 7 days I'm fully on. And then the 3 days, one is fully off, 2 days active recovery, so easy movement by feel, everything. Those, I force myself to basically even have almost nothing to do with triathlon as much as I can, just to give my mind a rest. I want to, because when there's stuff coming on, my mind immediately wants to, because it's, but I know it's best for myself if I, let's say, go to city, meet friends, and do other things that have nothing to do with it in order for me to maintain this monk life.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you're real, that's mindset training, I would say, those couple of days where you're really pulling away from the sport, because you're going to have impulses, right? Like you've done this big block. It's like more, 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 but you're not responding to those impulses to do more. And you're moving in the opposite direction of that. And you've already talked about Kobe Bryant. Michael Phelps, who are some other people that you pull, mindset, philosophies, and how do you incorporate mindset into, you know, as a training discipline in your routine?
I mean, there's a few good ones. You could also talk about David Goggins and his books and his stories. I mean, he has when you see him, people don't know him, they don't know the book, that's just a loud voice. But for example, actually, I have a tattoo on my forearm. It says 40%. It's actually from that book. So nobody knows what it means. It's from that book. It's more like a stamp for myself. So basically the 40% rule is from the David Goggins. It's from him basically. So it says that you could use it in both ways. On the one hand, you could use it. So it's right next to my running watch. So when you think, for example, this, he says that the mind has a governor basically in place, like a car, like where you get stopped. And most people quit at the 40% line, he says. And so for example, when you train yourself over time, mindset wise and in racing, and you have to, of course, practice gradually in training, especially the challenging ones, that you override that governor to a little extent in if there's a place in that session to do that. And over time, maybe you can get to 60% of your capacity. And yeah, so I guess that's the way to slowly build that.
I watched one of your videos. I think it was from 20. I want to say it was from 2022 about mindset, about, you know, getting in the zone. You had kind of three different parts to it. And you talk about, you know, kind of sitting, getting into that silence without saying the word meditation. You were describing a lot of the techniques that we use in meditation, concentration, being able to concentrate the mind. You had talked about a body scan. Is that something that you incorporate in a regularly into your training, or is it? Yeah, I would just end on that note.
I think every single session, I would say basically that I prepare myself mentally when I go to the pool. I'm kind of, even from music I choose, or I would block out WhatsApp and those things. So you're kind of switching into this a bit different character, and then only that moment counts. So that's what I always found very, very interesting about the sport of triathlon, that it's so simple. While you're in it, you just have to think about, okay, at that moment, just about swimming, every single stroke. So staying in that moment, especially with a long distance, when you have this for 8 hours, let's say, I saw it as a holiday. Yes, it was physically challenging, but it was mentally so, so amazing to just be present. And so that's probably why I love training so much. And that's probably one of the reasons why I am doing this now full time, because I do love to be in that space when you're just in a moment, nothing matters except feeling your body. It could be even a bad day, but then you try to think, okay, how do you switch that mentally? And like, do you have to adjust? Do you have to change? So it's, most athletes will know this journey and will have experienced it. But I find it's a very, the more you do it and the longer you train over years, the more you learn about that, I feel. There are several levels you can go pretty deep in, I believe.
Mm. What's your relationship or what's your pattern with journaling?
I was just going to ask that same thing. Hmm. I saw you pull up a pretty pink little journal on one of your videos recently.
Yeah, it is. It says 5-year journal. So I always used to like the writing part. So I used to even write blog posts on those things, not just so much for others, but I feel like this actual writing part does something to your brain. I mean, I think it's even proven that when you write things down, you kind of get a different perspective on things. And I start that in the morning now, right now, the journaling I do, I keep it short. So for now, if I feel like writing more, but now just write 3 things every single morning I'm grateful for. So that just gets you in the right space to start the day. So, because some days when you train hard, especially when you're towards the end of the blocks, you're just very tired. So it's very easy to be in this emotionally compromised brain. If you don't steer your brain, it's going to monkey brain. It's just going to say, okay, everything is bad. Oh my God, now you have to do this swim session. Oh my God. And this kind of pulls you out of it. It's very simple. It could take you 2 minutes and you just write through things. Could be anything. Could be about training. Could be about anything, but anything positive. It just switches your brain. I feel like it really helps.
You had a strong background in martial arts. We talked about that at the beginning of the podcast. And martial arts is so much about the mind. And I won't even go into the qualities of what I know of martial arts. But how did that so long ago, how do you feel like that has informed your, what still carries over for you from that martial arts background?
That's a good question. I've actually never thought about that link. But there's probably some, because for a good while, I did then Wing Chun, which is also from Kung Fu, kind of an eskrima. So it is this Chinese way. And we had the teacher and the kind of respect to each other you show when you go in. I'm just going through it in my mind now, the things that I did. So there was a lot of respect towards others. But yeah, I mean, don't judge a book by its cover. That was a very simple rule. Because, for example, I started in, I came from the gym and handball before as well. So I was a stronger 18-year-old guy, but there was a 50-year-old guy who was a lawyer, doctor, whatever he was. Well, very thin, and from the book, he's like, yeah, of course, the 18-year-old guy, a bit more muscular, beats the 50-year-old guy. Or like, but when it comes to just the calmness, control, self-control, calmness under pressure especially, because when you are in situations when you're physically taxed, and also, of course, it's a training environment, but you're also going to places when you get some instincts of introduction of, if you go further that route, you might die. Let's say the choking feeling or other things. So you're like, you're pretty, if you're often in an environment, of course, you're in a safe environment, nothing would ever happen, but you get maybe more... You learn maybe a bit more about how those hormones, when they start flooding in, panic, fear, what do you do with those? You don't have to just, they are there. So for example, just heard in a podcast the other day before a race, when you're nervous, that it's a good thing to be nervous. It means your body's priming. And I can really say that's true. 2018, that was my second Kona, and I had a bike crash before, and I was there. And I remember before the start, it was just before, I was sitting under a palm tree. It was 10 minutes before the start. I did warm up already. Everybody said probably, he's meditating, he's sitting so calmly. I was asleep, and that's not good. And it did not go good at all. So you should be nervous, and I wasn't nervous, so you should definitely be nervous.
I've had that too. I've been too calm before a race and
no bueno.
Yeah, it was not good. Like, I didn't load my nutrition onto the bike and just stupid mistakes because you get into this kind of like, yeah, it's all okay, but you still need to take action. You still need to be, as we would say, awake and ready for what's going to be coming your way.
What was the speaking of that, like anticipation, what was the first pro race like? Was it in Sweden, Challenge Sweden? Was that your
first? Sweden, yeah. 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 I mean, last year was anyways riddled with sickness and all those things. So I never really got the fitness and a lot of things, but that's not sounding an excuse, but I'm actually grateful for all those things that happened now as a learning. And all those experiences were good. They were extremely painful, especially coming out of that first pro race, which was such a disappointment. I think I was one of the last pros there, really, to be honest. I mean, I didn't come from a swim background, wasn't completely terrible, but the rest, you know, bike and run as an age grouper, I did a lot better than that. So I really had a, let's say, bad day. So it was really like, not this fabulous, oh, your first pro is so great. And it was really bad. I mean, in the end, you know, you have to realize nobody cares. Nobody cares if you do well or not. Like, literally nobody cares. But like, it did hurt, but it just forces you to do changes. I think when you have resistance like that in your life, however painful it, I think, I believe Tony Robbins called it the pain threshold. That's something that really resembled with me, because same back in the workforce, there has to be a certain pain threshold of whatever you want to call it, pain or resistance, for you to change sometimes. When it's a really deep thing, you always knew, like I said, for me to drop my shadow career, there was a lot of resistance needed in order to actually make that step, because it's so, there's no reason. It's not like I got five world titles and as an age group and everybody says, hey, when are you finally turning pro? It was none of that, right? But I knew, my God, and that's why I'm doing it. And I'm still convinced, I know when I give my all to it, that over time I can do something special. I don't know what that is, but I know it's going to be special.
Yeah, and I love that. Well, that's the belief. You believe, right? And you don't need anybody else to believe. You need to believe that you can go and get this Kona slot that you're going after. But you're also taking time element out of it. Although I'm sure you're bumping up against it. I think one of your recent posts, like, is Oceanside like in Texas too quick? Like, where do I stand? Mm. So you bump up against it, but you know it's long term. You know you're committed to this. So what does it take for you to believe? Well, you do believe. So what does it take for someone to kind of detach from that timeline, saying like, I need to get to Kona this year or else I have to throw this all away? You're taking the approach of, well, if it takes 3 or 4 years, I'm investing in me. I believe in myself in this program. I'm gonna stay committed.
I think that comes down to basically the science of goal setting. That's, again, something I never got taught. I kind of, don't know where I have it from, but from books probably and people I met and podcasts, all those things probably cocktailed together. But the goal setting, for example, it's an objective goal. If you say, I want to win Kona, I want to qualify for X, Y, it's not really a goal. That is super imprecise. So it's like, okay, let's have a look at what do you have to swim at, swim, bike, run, what do you have to do historically? You can look that up. Everybody has those Ironman results. In which range do you have to be to have a shot at doing that? What did you do historically? Where are you at right now? What did you swim right now? And what would be, let's say, if you put in this training right now, for example, I can't make a prognosis how I'm going to improve, because I never in my life before first trained like this and I never dedicated myself. So I can't say if it's going to take 1 or 2 years. I don't know, but I just know that I'm doing everything I can right now and really everything. And now I'm seeing the fruits of my labor, which is amazing to see. So I believe for those people that are having these goals and those, it's basically something really objective that you described, and objectivity, and like, it's basically comparison is the thief of joy. And that is basically what it is. If I would say Oceanside, or let's say especially Texas, is only a pass if I qualify for Kona, I think I'm not going to be, I don't know if you're going to be very motivated for long in the sport, because athletes, from all I hear, they have way more failures than successes, way more. So even if they win once, you're going to feel good for 2 days, then you lose 5 times, you're going to each time suffer for a week maybe. So it's like, yeah, I think this process driven, I just listened to a podcast an interview from Michael Phelps. He talked about it, that he never talked about competition. He only talked about his splits when he was 11 years old. He said, I want to swim 55 and that by that time, by Christmas, that. So it was all about time. So basically it was all about his journey. So I'm kind of trying to do the same, that I'm just focusing on my numbers, my things. Then I go there, I'm going to race 100%, give it all I have, best decisions possible, follow my instinct, but like in the back of my mind, always is trying to win kind of mentality. I think that is still important that you have that somewhere in there, because otherwise you're just going, I got to let them go. It's okay. I just do my journey. I think that's a fine line. And it's also hard to communicate because you don't want to sound arrogant and say, I just want to win, because that doesn't sound right either. But I think you need to have this fine line. But in the end, over half distance or full distance, within 5%, you can almost predict what you're going to do. It's not like you're going to be 20% better just because you have a good mindset on a day. It's just, yeah, so that's my two cents to it.
Why Oceanside?
Why Oceanside? I mean, it's part of the Ironman series. That's kind of where it starts. It's, I could have done only Texas, and some people do that. Then I would have done the first triathlon of the year and right away an Ironman, right away a high caliber pro race. Like I said, last year I had no good pro races. So I want to kind of shake it a bit out of the water. And I only heard good things about it. It's a massive challenge because, to be honest, to be competitive for half distance as a pro, if you don't run under 30 minutes in a 10K, you're going to be left behind. So I know, for example, I have specific goals for swim and bike. How can I be there? But I know if I run a 115 on that course, it's going to be amazing for me. Even 116, I didn't do this. So you have to put things in your journey and perspective. So like, we'll see.
Yeah, but you're not, the thing that I love about it is that you're not shying away from it. Like some pros will eye the races like, well, I can finish, you know, go to these obscure races or locations. And it's like, well, I can finish, you know, there's only five pros there. So, you know, at least I'll be top five, you know. You're going after one of the biggest half Ironmans to kick off the season and not shy of putting yourself out there. And I think that takes, you know, it takes courage. And it takes belief, again, back to that belief, but it takes a lot of courage to put yourself into that position to see what's possible for you. And always having on those blinders, that sticking to Maddie's plan, even though there's all this stuff going on around and you're in the social world, you're in the world of news and social media. So it's got to be a challenge sometime not to be inundated with the external stimulus.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not like I don't have the fear of failure voice. I have it very loud in my head, especially when it comes, like you said, to the 70.3 distance, because I know, I mean, for Texas, also because I'm going to be mainly focusing on Texas, to be honest, if I'm going to be even how I am right now, but like if I would be extremely prime in Oceanside, like if I would win Oceanside, I would have doomed my Texas race more or less. You can basically say physiology-wise, oh my God, good luck in Texas. You're going to have a long day. So the thing is really like that a little bit. So, but in the end, like you say, I definitely have fear of failure, of embarrassing myself and all those things. But like, again, Kobe Bryant quote, get over yourself. I think he said it, get over yourself. Like he has a moment when he failed the biggest shot and everyone. I mean, it's not even a stage. Like nobody cares what I'm doing, right? Even with YouTube and the people that really love you and care about you, they don't care if you're first or last there. They're proud of you. So, but it is for sure. It's not like I'm going there. Oh my God, I'm going to ace Oceanside. It's going to be so amazing. Oh my God, I'm going to be first. It's not like that. Like I really don't know how it's going to go. It might go good and terrible, but I think the fix for that, for staying process driven and not sulk for a week, because then I would be mad at myself. If I would have a bad race and sulk for a week, then I would say, oh my God, you really failed. So I think the fix for that is going mentally, going back to work. So the next day, let's say, going back to work in terms of training might just mean a 30-minute bike ride. But it doesn't matter. But not like you change your rhythm, routine the next day. So you stay this process-driven and kind of leave the past in the past and then just focus on each day.
There is the Carlsbad 5000, which is the fastest 5K on Sunday after Oceanside, if you wanted to line up for that.
a run race.
Yeah. Yeah, the next day. I'll be doing it. Yeah. Come join. Yeah,
BJ's always trying to recruit people to, we have a young athlete. He's 12. Is he 12?
12.
We have a 12-year-old athlete who's a very fast runner. And so he always targets the Carlsbad 5000. So BJ as his coach is going to run with him. So BJ is always trying to recruit people from the Oceanside course to come and run the 5K the next day. I'll be sipping coffee along the Pacific
the
Coast
next
Highway.
Next day. So Monday. Yes. Sunday.
No,
right,
Sunday. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I can do a jog, but maybe not full gas. Probably going to be pretty sore. But, I'm going to be there either way. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, the Oceanside Run course is deceivingly fast. It's a really, it's a lovely course. It's a really, really great course. But to get back to that, like, you're human, right? We're gonna have emotions that come up. Do you give yourself a little grace period of like feeling disappointment? I know you're really good at like moving forward, but how do you honor like what comes up without stewing in it for days? And I think that's mindset, right? It's like, don't stew in it for days. Don't be in those thought cycles about what you're feeling. But do you give yourself a little grace there to feel what's coming up? Because I think there's a fine line between feeling and repressing.
Exactly. No, you have to feel it. So you have to really then, but then fully feel it, like in your face, speak everything out that is in your brain and get it out and really feel it. Because I think, like you say, if you don't, if you kind of half feel it, and then it's going to linger, and then it's going to linger even longer than a week. It's because you're like, it's in your subconscious. It's going to influence decisions about your next training sessions, when you should stop probably. It's going to probably boycott the next month. Who knows? So, yeah, fully feel disappointment, absolutely. Although it's extremely painful, so you don't want to, really don't want to. But I think that's where everybody needs an outlet. I feel this writing part helps. This kind of neutralizes emotions a bit. That's why I kind of enjoy being so, let's say, authentic. And because I wasn't always authentic growing up, I didn't grow up in an authentic world. It was more like this. Everybody is a bit playing these roles. So I enjoy now really just saying what is going on in my brain.
Yeah, it's truth, right? Truth is fluid. So you can show up in a room with everybody you know, and you can be okay. You don't have to worry like, oh, this person knows this about me and this person knows this about me. But there has to be a degree of what you're doing, and you might have just been alluding to it, like being out there and putting it out there where it's really benefiting you. You're processing your experiences, you're reinforcing your goals and your routines. And then we're all benefiting because we get this great insight into what it looks like to be a rookie pro and have big dreams.
It's absolutely right. It really comes back that energy. So when I write something, it's not entirely just for, you know, the social world. It's also for me. I'm probably just as much. So sometimes, like, because sometimes you say things and you kind of maybe hit it in your brain, even like when you talk, you basically talk with a camera. Right? It's very weird for me in the beginning when I started, you're talking to a camera, but then you get better and now I don't even think about it anymore. But so you kind of just process through your brain because you don't have a person to talk to per se. You're just talking to the audience that might watch it on the couch somewhere, which is cool. But like, I'm talking basically to a reflection. So it's an internal dialogue, and it definitely helps to kind of process things. Yeah.
How was that first live? I saw that like first 20 seconds, you were like, wow, this is kind of weird being live here, but it was just like so raw. How was that first live video you did?
Yeah, so I started doing like a live Q&A session on YouTube as an idea, something new to combine a bit for, yeah, you can call it for the community, but also I feel like I also, even that is not just for others, also for me, because I worked as a physio for many years and I helped countless people, not countless, but like 16 patients a day, let's say. So you help to the extent that it drains you, but I helped so many each day, even if I knew you'd exhausted today. You know, you really helped other people. And that completely went away with the sport. So suddenly it's just you. So I needed something, another outlet. That's why I use this journey from, that's also why I want this story to succeed. I want to cross the finish line in Kona. And it's not like, oh, look at me and here I won. It's not that. But it's like, hey guys, I quit at 32. Can you imagine? 32 and I still made it to the world top. Oh, that's a good story. So that's going to hopefully motivate people. Because people, you know, they, you know how it is these days. It's a difficult world for everybody. So it's people 9 to 5 are struggling. I think there's a high depression rate, even suicide. It's not a happy place. So I think hopefully through my story that will succeed. I manifest it in whatever I succeed me. I already feel like it's succeeding now. But yeah, so maybe that gives some energy back.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you have been frugal with like your, you know, finances, as far as, you know, you don't have any major sponsors right now. You have a beautiful bike, but I'm assuming you paid for that. And, you know, but you're doing some home remedies for your, you know, your fueling. And how have you, triathlon's an expensive sport. So we're speaking mostly to age groupers here, and it can be overwhelming, especially if they're, you know, they're in a family or they have a partner or a spouse that maybe doesn't get it, you know, and they're spending all of this money. What are some of the tricks that you have adopted that has allowed you to stay pretty frugal with the expenditure of money?
I mean, I really tried to focus only on things that are absolutely necessary. So, I mean, the biggest thing is probably for continuing having to buy it is running shoes. That's probably something you cannot skip on, even quality. So that's the one you kind of cannot compromise. But the bike, for example, I bought that when I was working still. So I had the wetsuit as well. All those big things you need when you get started, let's say, depends where you are, but you don't need a wetsuit. But the entry barrier isn't easy for the sport. So that's true. So especially now they kind of, with triathlon bikes, they kind of cut the midsection. When I started, for $2,500, you could get amazing tri bikes. You could get that still. That's gone. $5,000-$6,000 it starts, which is like, oh, okay. So it's, I'm trying to do what I can. I mean, again, nutrition wise, I basically straight up sugar with sodium mix, which is one part of the salt, right? So it's the sodium pills. It's like a sport product, basically electrolyte drink. So I use that because, again, I have to fuel the sessions. And until, you know, of course, when a sponsor comes on board for sport nutrition, that is either Morten or Precision Hydration at this point. Nothing else makes sense, to be honest. So I can say that. But, those are the things I'm doing when it comes to daily life and the rest, you know, cut my own hair, save on that. What else?
Netflix, do you have any movie? Do you have any streaming services or Zwift or anything like that?
I even cut Zwift. So I'm basically just me and the music, and I don't even look at Zwift, but I'm going to get it back. When I'm rich and famous, I'm going to buy Zwift.
I love it. Well, we might have to march you down to the Canyon headquarters, which is right down the street here. I know. It's that showroom is it's.
Oh yeah, they have the showroom there.
Yes. Oh, very beautiful.
I love. There's so much noise and marketing in this sport, which is great. Like, I guess I should not say noise and marketing. Marketing is a beautiful thing when it does what it does, and it's great. But it kind of gets blurred between what you need and what you want. And so I love the reference to the running shoes. Like, you'll wait till the deal comes out. You don't care about the color, right? And I found myself just in this looking at the new Hoka shoes. I'm like, oh my God, those are amazing. They're $275. So can I get like 2 year old model carbon shoes, or, and then you get to the level of, I don't care what it looks like. I don't care what the color is. I just need the performance. So again, this is you honing in on what's important to you and constantly keeping that focus. Like, you just need fresh running shoes. That's really the goal. It doesn't matter what the color is. I know it probably matters what brand, cause you're probably comfortable in certain shoes, Nikes, I think. So sifting through that noise, I think, is an important element to not only professionals, but to age groupers too, to get into this sport.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's I mean, on race day, I think there's probably a 10% confidence boost. If you really look good, if you have a nice pair of socks, a nice pair, I think it could even do something if it really motivates you to that. Or even, like, to be honest, if you're having a full-time job and if the one collar costs $20 more than the other, and that one collar maybe motivates you to get out the door after a long day of work, I mean, that is a well-invested $20, I think. But at this point, for me, I sifted through everything that's kind of broken down to a minimum, and then I don't care about the color at this point. So, I like nice colors of shoes, don't get me wrong, but on that, yeah.
So you just got a bike fit. How did that all work out?
Really good. Yeah, I was really surprised to, I mean, again, I'm tweaking what I can. I know, for example, it isn't enough if I just get my watts up. It's just half of the game almost when it comes to long distance cycling. So I knew if I don't improve aerodynamically and like on a whole setup, if I don't improve, it doesn't matter if I get more watts. I need both. So I would obviously, if finances were an issue, I would just say, I'm going to fly to UK. I'm going to do wind tunnel testing, this, all those things that would be banked and booked 3 times a year, at least. I don't know, more, no idea. But So what can I do right now? So, okay, I found these small pages on Instagram. Oh, this guy for $80, you know, he makes a 3D printed bottle holder, the same as like the pros have from Canyon. Okay, then this other guy, this other page, here, another $70, he makes the drink holder. And then the bar, the bottle is going to be between my chest. It's going to be 8 to 10 watts. And just like fiddling it together like that and finding inspiration from what's out there. And then I built that together and again, found, it was a bit luck because I knew, for example, the UK time trial scene is very good. You can see how people like from the UK, Ruth Essel, Alistair Brownlee, how they sit on a bike. You can see, you don't have to be a scientist. You just know that is aerodynamic. You can just see how they're sitting on that. And I knew also before I lived in UK a bit, so I knew the UK time trial scene is just a lot of tradition. So they really know a lot when it comes to that. So I got in touch with one guy from the UK and luckily it was possible via online as well. So we did it via like a Zoom fit. And I mean, it's a bit hit and miss. You don't know what a bike fit. You probably know it's a bit maybe like a hairdresser sometimes. You just don't know what you're going to get. But I was lucky to have a really good one and I could have never done this on my own. Never, ever. Comfort, power production, how it feels. And so now I feel, okay, with the finances that I have possible, I invested on total with 3D printed and bike fit, maybe 400. And I'm pretty sure that 400 will get me a long way versus not having spent that 400. So, yeah.
Nice. What's the grand vision? What's the big dream that you hold?
I mean, the dream started really, it's all about Kona, to be honest. So it's all about Hawaii. And I've been there, like I said. I mean, you guys have been, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. I mean, I've seen BJ on the website. You have done it a few times. We are the right people to talk about it because that place, there's some say either you hate it or you love it. But when I arrived in an island, I knew immediately I love this place. I wasn't like, oh, this is so hot. I went the first time out with a bike on the road. I feel like I was flying past everybody. Other was going easy. Everything felt kind of easy and natural. And then I read all the books from Mark Allen and the story behind it and the island. And it just everything clicked. So always when I was there, it felt like a really special place. So there is some energy on that place. That's for certain. So, the moment probably... Again, I said earlier when I was 2018 there and I was falling asleep before the race, overtrained like hell and everything. So I was shuffling along. I remember that was one of the, you could probably call it awakening moment or calling. I don't know what to describe it. I don't know if it was my subconscious screaming, but I think I never had that in my life. I promise. Only once in my life that a voice or my own voice in my head really loudly talked to me, like a shock moment. I was in the race. Ali Drive anymore. I was Ori and Queen K on top, just on top. And the pros were coming against me, like the first top 10. I was just going out towards there. And I was shuffling along, feeling miserable, tired, and everything not moving at all. Like, oh, this is horrible, and all those things. And then suddenly, like, I saw the first 10 pros coming. Like, a voice literally shook me. What the hell are you doing here? Really loud, like a whip. I was just thinking nothing, like a whip. What the hell are you doing there? Why are you not on the other side of the road? That was really like that. And that again, that is probably the second moment of my life. On the other one, first was the judo promise. And this is the second one. That was so crystal clear. And I was like, oh my God, what was that? And that definitely gave momentum for what came afterwards. Not enough to kind of change right away and say, I'm going to be a full-time athlete. But like it did a lot. I never forgot that.
How'd you finish that race? Did you pick it up or were you
on that run? Energy. I think I never had it like that. I was so overtrained. Literally out of 42 kilometers, 1 kilometer felt good. I promise you. I never had that in my life. Never. But I finished, of course. Always finished. Yeah. Tried to not walk and always finished. So that's also a promise I'm going to make. I'm not going to do this. I think Ironman is so much a mental sport. You cannot go in and say, oh, but there's also an Ironman next week, you know, because you're going to have at least, I assume even Jan Frodeno talks about it when you bring the world title home, you have 10, 15 moments when you just think, oh my God, I'm going to fall apart now. And if you give yourself the door open and you see what a pro athlete is happening, they spiral into their DNF phase. It's like one of the other, one of the other, because you kind of basically expect, and I'm I know it's going to come now, for example, in Texas and those things, but each time it comes, it's still a shock, right? Because it might come really early that you feel not like you did in training, so really bad that you're like, oh my God, this day is over with. So you have to know that it comes and then you somehow find a way through it. So you have to make before the dedication the promise again, you are going to finish. Even if I'm going to crawl and be 17 hours or just before the cutoff, I'm going to finish. So that's one promise for sure. Unless I jeopardize my health, obviously, unless it's really something, okay, I'm either sick or injured. It's the only one, but otherwise I'll always finish.
Yeah, you got to let your yes be yes. I think that's an important concept. Finish the deal. As long as you're not doing harm to yourself, finish the deal. Mm-hmm. Like you're there. I think it does set a trajectory, and I've seen it too. It sets a momentum in the opposite direction, and now you're trying to push that rock up the hill, that the rock that you just pushed down and created all this like ease and flow. Now it's going the other way, which is a lot of work to get it turned around. So I love that. I think it's important on the professional level, but also in the age group level to see through what you signed up for, you know, commit to yourself. It's a commitment to you.
Christian Blumenfeld had also, I mean, you can hear when you hear him talk, he has a lot of passion as well for the sport. And he even said, and he said it so well, again, he rationalized it. He said, okay, I could have just quit the race, but what am I going to do? I'm going to sit in a hotel and feel bad for myself and watch it on TV. And he said, okay, why not? I feel horrible. It was horrible. At least I can, you know, do an easy jog and get an easy jog training session in. I'm anyways tapered, so I just do a training session or something. So it's a really process-driven mindset. So he's one of the few guys in triathlon that I know that, you know, from a young age, I hope you get him on a podcast at some point where you have to talk about the moment. I remember he said it 10 years ago and Norway triathlon was nothing. There was no existing squat or nothing. They said we want to win Olympics. And so he manifested it. I think if you put it in the universe, that's why I talk about Kona, there's a force to that. I mean, there will always be some people that say, okay, this is, why is he talking like that? They will not necessarily get it, but there is a force if you have the courage to speak something out that is so almost ridiculous, delusional. But the thing is, there's nothing irrational about winning a world championship. There's nothing irrational about winning a gold medal. You can't rationalize. That's why I'm not surprised. For example, unfortunately, the Germans haven't been doing well when it comes to Olympics and all. And I think it has to do partly with the environment, maybe, that it's not a dream or culture. They don't have that. And most of the Germans that adapted that removed themselves a little bit from their culture. Jan Frodeno lives in Girona, Patrick Lange a bit for somewhere else. Or it doesn't matter if it's the location, necessarily, but they evolved, because I know I have the same mindset as Jan Frodeno. When he talks in German, he grew up next to where I grew up, basically. So he has the same thing, and he evolved from that. And it can give you a lot of strength then when you have that background, but you have to know kind of, you have to learn to dream, let's say.
Oh, yes. And why not me? You know, why not me for the challenges of life? And why not me for, you know, the highest level of what I can achieve in this life? Like, why not me, as opposed to why me? Why, you know, why me? But anything that we've seen in this life, from these microphones to this computer screen to, you know, the reigning world champion, was once in the imagination. But we dismiss the imagination. We're so driven by, you know, what makes sense on paper, but not all of us, right? So if we were, then the three of us wouldn't be sitting here talking today, because the three of us are examples of what it means to, you know, take the paper and put it aside and follow the dream. So I love that. Like, we have to, it's a beautiful message, like, hold that dream. And if you really boil it all down to science, like attracts like. So if you just keep moving in that direction, you know, the yogis taught this thousands of years ago. You and Albert Einstein proved this as well. Like, you can't not achieve it. Like, it's impossible not to achieve it. If you just stay focused and you just keep going and you release that timeline and you stay true to, you know, what's sitting on your heart, you're going to get it. You'll be challenged, but you're going to get it.
Yeah. I love that. That sounds really, yeah.
So we talk about manifesting. How can we manifest, you know, through this podcast, some support for you? Like, what, how can people support you best to get on this journey, to walk alongside you with it?
I think one momentum, really, there's a bit of momentum now on YouTube. So if you want to have a look at YouTube, look at the journey, how that is going. And otherwise, I'm also coaching a handful of athletes, not too many. I mean, 5 to 10 max. I really want to give 100% because I know myself, I missed 100%. So if I had 20 athletes, I would give them 100%. And I would probably boycott my own journey to this point because I'm a bit too much helper. But I'm trying to find some outlets to still, you know, help. So YouTube, coaching for a couple of athletes, if it fits. And yeah, I mean, sponsor-wise, of course, you have to find a connection with the brand that it works for both sides. But I do believe at this point, for most triathlon brands, I don't have a CV in the sport, right? So I'm basically a new in the profession. You need a CV. It's fine and dandy if you have a little YouTube channel. I get that. But you need to understand, okay, what is that CV? How is this swim bike looking like? What is this right now? So after Oceanside in Texas, for example, you have a little bit something in your CV. So now I have nothing. So I understand. So it's part of the journey. That's why I'm not pressing on that. I'm not looking for something. I know when you're, again, following my journey and when I'm good enough, like brands and companies will come to me.
Yes, yeah, they will. Like they'll be running to you, I'm sure. Well, we will. We'll see you in Oceanside. I will be spectating that day. BJ's racing, so you probably won't see much of each other. But
of course, yeah.
What? You'll be maybe on the run course.
I don't know how the course works, but with loops and stuff. No, I mean bike, not the snow loops.
Yeah, I may.
Maybe in transition.
Maybe in transition.
Before the race starts or after when you're packing up your bike and BJ's going out for the run. No, you'll be way out on the run.
Yeah,
no, you'll be on the. Yeah. Well, I will. I'll be out there and really look forward to. Yeah, look forward to meeting you in person. Will you be staying in the US between those time frames?
Yes, exactly. So full month US with the homestay families. My wife might come with the sister for the Houston race. First one probably not, but Houston probably checking in for that race to fly in. And otherwise, I'll be more or less on my own. So I'm happy to have you guys there and meet and anybody who wants to meet up and say hi.
Yeah. That sounds wonderful.
Grab some coffee.
Maddie, thank you so much. We've really been looking forward to this and it did not disappoint. So appreciate your time. And thank you again.
Yeah, it was good fun. Thanks so much, guys.